You're listening to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. It's Wednesday, and that means it's time to talk our state's history. Today, a Michigan tale involving a radio personality, a mayoral recall, city corruption, and an unsolved murder that happened this week in 1930. We welcome back state archivist with the Michigan History Center, Mark Harvey, and author and expert on organized crime in Michigan, Scott Bernstein. Really happy to have both of you here to talk history.
Thank you.
I love doing these. I love looking back and being able to chop it up with people like yourself.
Absolutely. So, Mark, we're talking about Jerry Buckley, a Detroit radio personality who launched his broadcasting career in 1928. Just to kind of set the stage for us, tell us what the medium of radio was like in the Detroit of the 1920s.
I guess I sort of equate it to what the atmosphere must have been like during the space race. There was just a lot of excitement around it. That might be because I love radio, but it was new, it was exciting, it was like nothing they had seen before or experienced. Commercial radio really didn't appear on a national scale to the end of the decade. NBC took off in 1926, CBS in 1927. There was just an incredible buzz about this communication tool that was changing how people lived.
So if you are someone on radio in Detroit, Scott, you are the focus of a lot of attention.
Yeah, Jerry Buckley was a budding superstar in this burgeoning new medium, someone who held a lot of sway in shaping public opinion. He was known as the mouthpiece of the people, and he came from a law enforcement background. So he was, I believe, he naturally gravitated towards the law and order and politics and, you know, those issues of the day.
So that takes us to you, Mark. Take us back to Detroit in the late 1920s.
So Charles Bowles was the mayor in 1929, 1930, but I think it's important to note that Detroit was a complex city at this time. The immigrant population was swelling. The auto industry is in full bloom and is creating lots of wealth and lots of opportunity in this city. And it's an international city, right? And here you have Charles Bowles, who he was a lawyer and he ran for mayor in 1925 unsuccessfully, backed by the Ku Klux Klan, interestingly. And he didn't win and became a recorder's court judge, so still a position of sway. And then he went back and ran again and won the office without the support of the Klan in 1929. He seems like an antagonist right out of a gangster movie, right from the get-go. He starts his administration on the heels of the Great Depression by doing things like cutting public assistance programs and raising streetcar fares and really not doing a whole lot about the rising crime wave. In fact, Bowles created a special vice squad unit that some felt applied the law unevenly, that's to say the least. Hmm. And he had a penchant for political favoritism, saying that only members of his Oddfellows Lodge could be appointed manager of the street railway system. So one of his most famous sayings is, when pressed on the rising violent crime, Bowles quipped that, like parasites, the solution may be just to let the criminals kill each other.
Now, in terms of the underworld, he was the at the center of this tug of war between warring gangland factions that were trying to, you know, puppet him. And Jerry Buckley was someone that was on one side of that tug of war and advocating for his removal.
And so that led to this move to recall the mayor. And so how was Jerry pushing that on the airwaves?
Well, he was, you know, using his bully pulpit to rally the troops, if you will, you know, get the population of Detroit up in arms and angry about a corrupt mayor.
And
he was successful. The mayor was recalled.
And the recall election, it happened July 22nd, 1930. And so the mayor was recalled, right,
yeah.
Mark?
Yeah. I think the final percentage was 57% voted to remove him. But what's interesting and important to remember is that that didn't put him immediately out of office. That just queued him up for a special election in September, which Bowles only lost by about 13,000 votes to Frank Murphy. And then he actually challenged it and asked for a recount, which he didn't get. But he recovered quickly. By 1931, he was back on the bench of the recorder's court as a judge, which, you know, was still a pretty influential position.
So, Scott, tell us what transpired later the night following the vote.
So Buckley did his radio show at the top floor of the LaSalle Hotel, which was at the corner of Woodward and Adelaide, which now occupies the townhouses that are a couple blocks north of Ford Field and Comerica Park and Little Caesars Arena. It was originally constructed as the Savoy Hotel, then it became the LaSalle, eventually it was the Detroiter, but it's been torn down since the mid-1990s. But at the time, it was a luxurious hotel. It was a place that was a kind of a beehive of activity and a lot of buzz and excitement around this new hotel. And Buckley broadcast from the hotel, and after he had gotten off the air that night and after the results of the recall had been reported, he was having a drink at the bar down at the LaSalle Hotel. And as he was walking out in the lobby, he was gunned down by two gunmen. And, kind of all hell broke loose that evening. And it was a capper on what had been an incredibly violent couple weeks. It was known in the press as Bloody July. There were a dozen gangland murders in that time period. And so it really served to galvanize public opinion towards, this real issue with violence in the bootlegging industry in Detroit.
And so how did people react to Jerry Buckley being murdered?
Well, this would be like if, Mitch Albom was slain or Charlie LaDuff was killed after, getting off the air. He was a celebrity. He was someone that had a lot of cachet and someone who's, wherever he went, doors were open for him. And people wanted to shake his hand and people wanted to pal around with him. So, people were shocked.
So there was a lot of focus and a lot of pressure. What about arrests?
There ended up being a number of arrests, all pretty, prominent gangland figures in Detroit. At the end of the day, I believe there might have been about a half dozen people that were either brought in for questioning or arrested, but only three stood trial. Angelo Lovecki, Ted Pizzino, mm-hmm. and Scarface Joe Bomarito. They were all members of a bootlegging contingent known as the River Gang. And the River Gang was led by the Licavoli brothers, Horseface Pete Licavoli and Thomas Yanni Licavoli, who were also brought in for questioning but never charged. But Scarface Joe Bomarito was their aide-de-camp, their main emissary on the street, as someone that was a vicious criminal with a lot of bodies on his resume. And the three of those guys stood trial but were acquitted.
And anything happened, Mark, as far as response from the governor, at a statewide response?
Yeah, the governor at the time was Fred Green, and he was so upset about the shooting that he flew to Detroit and ordered the state police to investigate the murder independently of the Detroit police. He didn't trust their ability to investigate it. And then he also threatened to call out the National Guard, which was a pretty new organization at that point, if necessary, to stop the killings in Detroit. It was the 11th or 12th murder in about 19 days.
What do you think happened, Scott?
Ironically, Jerry Buckley was someone that went on the airwaves and railed against graft. And in reality, he was immersed in graft himself. He was a bought and paid for member of the media. Whoever was greasing his palm the best was the one that got the results that they wanted. Gangland figures that he was friends with and business associates with wanted to leverage their access to him to get certain issues advocated for on the airwaves.
Not quite the righteous crusader.
Well, in reality, I think that he was a Pied Piper of propaganda. If you were buddies with him, he would go on the air and do your bidding. In this case, he was doing the bidding of people that wanted to get Charles Bowles kicked out of office. But there was another side of that, which were the gangsters that were backing Charles Bowles. And they were upset, and they took it out on him and murdered him in retaliation for that media campaign to remove Bowles from office.
Author and Michigan organized crime expert Scott Bernstein and state archivist with the Michigan History Center, Mark Harvey, giving us historical context to the murder of Detroit radio personality Jerry Buckley, gunned down in a Detroit hotel lobby this week in 1930. Guys, thank you so much.
Thanks, Cynthia.
Thank you.